Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to SportsMole's Premier League Preview Podcast. I'm Pascal Lemaire and I'm here with Liam Apicella to discuss Matchday 15 in the top flight. Last week we witnessed Leicester's Jamie Vardy set a new Premier League scoring record as he netted for the 11th straight match in the 1-1 draw with Manchester United. The Foxes lost top spot to Manchester City though, while Arsenal now lie fourth after failing to beat Norwich. There's plenty to get through this week, so let's not waste any time and get to Saturday's lunchtime kickoff as Stoke welcome Man City to the Britannia. Liam, let's start with City. Two big wins at home this week.
Massive wins, convincing wins. They'll be very pleased, especially Manuel Pellegrini. He spent big on Kevin De Bruyne in the summer, didn't he? A few eyebrows were raised, but he's showing the goods now. He scored three goals, but I think what will also please Pellegrini is they've shared the goals around. They're obviously without Aguero, but Delph has scored, Kolarov scored, De Bruyne's weighed in, Bonny's weighed in. They really are starting to share around the goals, which is something that they probably didn't do last year, especially when Aguero was out last year. It seemed to cost them. Obviously they've gone to the top of the table now, beating Southampton 3-1, and they're in the League Cup semi-finals. They've got Everton, who they'll probably fancy beating over two legs. Everton are in good form, but the way City are playing as well with these two wins, you'd have to fancy them, wouldn't you, going forward?
Absolutely, yeah, and I think in midweek that League Cup, it was only Hull who are a championship side, a good championship side this year, but you know, City always expected to win that. And certainly in that game, I think the absolutely massive thing for City was the return of David Silva. He came back in that game, and you know, it seems like ages since we've seen him play. It's been, I think, around 2 months since he got injured, but he looked absolutely back to his brilliant best. No rustiness at all. He was dictating the play in the middle there like he likes to, and you know, I think it was good, especially for City fans, to see, you know, De Bruyne get on the score sheet twice with Silva playing, because you know the worry was always going to be that. That they both quite like to run the show in that playmaking role, and if Silva is going to have that free role, De Bruyne looks like he's going to be quite happy maybe going out to the wing and playing out there. So that was good. I mean, looking ahead to this weekend now, Vincent Kompany's still missing. He's obviously a massive player for them defensively, and Aguero, Joe Hart, the two other players, the spine of that team, they're both doubts for this one. So if those three are all missing, that will certainly give Stoke some hope, but they won't be Stoke won't be very happy about how good Silva looked in midweek.
Definitely not. And you mentioned Kompany being out there. He is a big miss for this game, I think. Mangala's obviously suspended as well. That might be a blessing in disguise, the way he's played recently. But obviously they'll have two Argentines at the back, Di Michaelis and Otamendi. They might be able to form some sort of understanding, because City haven't defended well recently. And I think that's probably contributed to their poor form away from home. We have the Liverpool game as well, but looking back further than that, they went to Spurs earlier in the season. There was no Joe Hart, who is a doubt for this game as well. Caballero, he hardly inspires confidence in a defence, or he doesn't seem to, and that showed at Spurs when they shipped four goals. They also shipped four against Liverpool as well, without Kompany. They had Mangala and a rusty-looking Di Michaelis. You'd think maybe that he is a bit more up to form now, and Otamendi has started quite well with life in the Premier League. Their away form, as I mentioned, isn't great, hasn't been great at all. They've not won any of their last three away from home, and the Britannia Stadium is a very, very tough place to be going.
Absolutely, yeah. And Stoke, they come into this game, 2-0 win. They were also in the League Cup quarterfinal action midweek. 2-0 win over Sheffield Wednesday, another championship side there, but certainly there would have been doubts over whether they could win that, because Wednesday, you know, they've already knocked out Arsenal this year, had some great results there, but a fairly comfortable 2-0 win. A couple of great goals as well. Afellay, that first time volley, was a great hit, and then Bardsley with the free kick as well. And that was an important result for them, because at the weekend, 2-0 defeat at Sunderland, which was very disappointing. You know, Sunderland right down there at the bottom this year, and they were in the game for a lot of it, and then two quick goals, 82nd, 84th minute from Van Aanholt and Watmore. Really disappointing that for Stoke, because you know, they had looked pretty good in recent weeks, been keeping some clean sheets, and just to lose 2-0 like that against a team like Sunderland, very, very disappointing. Leaves them 12th in the table, but certainly great to bounce back in midweek. And they got Liverpool in the next round in the League Cup, which given how, you know, Liverpool 6-1 winners against Southampton last night, it's not the best draw. I think they probably would have preferred to draw Everton, but I mean, when you're a team like Stoke, Everton, City and Liverpool, the other three teams they could have drawn, any of those was going to be really difficult, but possibly Liverpool the hardest one going, given how good they're looking under Klopp at the moment. But it was still a good win, and they'll take confidence into this one.
Yeah, you mentioned they're 12th, and to be fair to them, I sort of thought they would probably be higher. Their performances seem to warrant a higher position. Mark Hughes has done a fantastic job there. He'll want to win this one, especially with the way he was dealt with by City 5 or 6 years ago. Now that probably still hurts a little bit. I think we've looked at Stoke over the years, and they were a very hard to play against side. They were gritty under Tony Pulis. They've obviously still got a bit of that, because Jack Butland been in great form this season. England call up, people saying he should be putting pressure on Joe Hart. I'm not sure he's quite ready for that, but he doesn't look too far away. They've kept 7 clean sheets in their last 11 matches. While they're doing that, they're also expansive going forward. You mentioned a great goal from Afolai there. They're bringing players like Afolai, a Champions League winner with Barcelona. He's coming off the Stoke bench now, which is showing how expansive they are. They've got players like Bojan. They're a really good side. And of course, I mentioned Butland there at the back. He's obviously been linked with Liverpool and Everton, I think. They'll be wanting to keep hold of him. Hughes has said he's not going anywhere in January, and I think they're going to have to keep hold of him. There'll be people knocking on the door for Bojan and players like that. But yeah, they will be very, very confident going into this. The win in midweek in the Cup will have definitely boosted them.
Absolutely, yeah. And their record against City at home in the Premier League is pretty good. They've only lost one out of seven against City at the Britannia, but that defeat they did have was last time out. City won 4-1 there in February, so maybe not read too much into that. But which way do you see this going?
It's tough, isn't it? Because Stoke's home record is okay. They've won two, drawn one, and lost three. It's nothing to write home about. Mention though that City haven't been great away. These are two good footballing sides, and I think it could be quite an entertaining game. I can see them both scoring, but very little to separate them. I'm going to go a 1-1 draw.
Draw, right, okay. I think City, they have looked pretty good in recent weeks. You mentioned, obviously, they haven't won in their last three Premier League away games, but I just think the return of Silva could be absolutely massive for this team, and I'm going to back them to win this one 2-1. So we've got one draw and a City win. There's 6 3 p.m. kickoffs on Saturday this week, and we start at the Emirates, where Arsenal are up against Sunderland. Liam, we'll start with the Gunners, down in fourth, and a really disappointing 1-1 draw with Norwich last time.
Yes, and it follows on from the disappointing trip away at West Brom the week before, where they lost as well. If you're going to challenge for a league title, I think you've got to be winning these sort of games. West Brom away, Norwich away, they're really where big 3 points, gritty teams who like to dig in, you've got to break them down. Arsenal, we seem to have this conversation every year about them, don't we? They start well, they look like they're going to go on and mount a serious challenge. And you mentioned there, they find themselves down in fourth, when if they'd have beaten West Brom and Norwich, they'd be too clear at the top. It happens every year with them, and you can understand the fans' frustrations, you really can. And to add insult to injury in that Norwich game, literally, they lost Sanchez, Cazorla and possibly Koscielny for this game. The first two especially are very key players, and Mertesacker at the back does not look the same player without Koscielny, does he?
Absolutely not. And I mean, Koscielny, he could be back for this weekend. I'm not sure they'll risk him, given, you know, there's that Olympiacos game coming up in midweek, which is of massive, massive importance. And you'd think they should be able to beat Sunderland at home. But yeah, like you said, I mean, the injuries, you do have to feel for them a bit, I think. You know, it is desperately unlucky, the injuries they've had this season. When you just look at the injury list now, it's Alexis Sanchez, Coquelin, Welbeck. You know, Welbeck, he's had some good games for them. He's kind of a forgotten man this year because he hasn't really played. Walcott, Wilshere, Arteta, Cazorla, Koscielny and Gibbs, both doubts for this one. And I mean, Sanchez, whether Wenger should have played him in that game, you know, he probably shouldn't. He'd already said that he wasn't 100% going into it. There was a little problem with his hamstring, and now he's pulled up, and he's going to be out for a month, Sanchez, which, you know, especially in December, you know, arguably the biggest month of the year, certainly one of the busiest. It's a huge blow for them. Cazorla, 3 months out injured, that's massive as well, because even though he hasn't perhaps been his best this season, he's such a key player for them. The loss of Coquelin, last month was absolutely huge for them as well. And if Koscielny can't play this weekend, it's a big blow. And certainly, the way it's going for them, usually this kind of collapse they have traditionally happens around February. It seems to have come a couple of months early this year. But if they can, if they get to the new year having, you know, if they're still within touching distance of the top of the table, that will be very impressive, because then they should get, you know, Sanchez coming back, some of the other key players coming back as well. And I think with the squad the way it is now, I mean, Ozil, you look at the stats for Ozil, he has been, you know, their star player in recent weeks. He's had a hand in 13 goals, 2 goals, 11 assists in his last 12 Premier League appearances. But I do wonder sometimes, he doesn't really come across to me as much of a match winner. You look at someone like Sanchez, he really does, you know, grab the game. But I think Ozil, a lot of the time, he'll chip in with goals and assists here and there, but you never really feel like he's going to win you matches. And I think he really needs to step up now with all those injuries I've just mentioned. It's a massive month for him, and if he can keep delivering these assists that everyone keeps talking about, and I think he just needs to win more matches. I don't really see that much from him, to be honest.
You mentioned there he needs to be a match winner. He certainly does. The next three games, the next 7 days, are massive for Arsenal. They obviously have Sunderland. They've got to win that to stay in contention at the top. They go to Olympiacos. They've made it so hard for themselves in that Champions League group, so much harder than it should have been with a group. Bayern Munich are obviously the stand-up side, but then Olympiacos and Dinamo Zagreb are hardly European heavyweights, are they? They obviously go there. They've got to win by two goals, or win 3-2, 4-3, 5-4, something like that. And then obviously it's on to Villa, bottom club. They need another 3 points there. They really need 9-9, and Ozil's going to have to play a huge part without the likes of Sanchez, without the likes of Cazorla. They really are going to be looking to him to get them the 9 points that they desperately need.
Absolutely, yeah. And I mean, I certainly agree with that. They do need 9 points out of nine this week, especially after, you know, a couple of bad results in the league recently. And you know, that you welcome Sunderland at home. Most fans, Arsenal fans, I'm sure, have earmarked this as a home banker. But Sunderland, you know, they come into this game back-to-back league wins for the first time this season. Only the second time they've had back-to-back league wins since the start of last season. So, you know, impressive couple of results they've had, and both clean sheets in both games as well. They had that 1-0 win at Palace, which, you know, it could have easily finished as a draw that game. It was the Scott Dan mistake. Defoe pounced on that, scored the goal. And then they beat Stoke at home last week, and that was a very impressive result given, you know, Stoke's good form in recent weeks. They had the late goals there from Van Aanholt and Watmore. Watmore's looking like a good young player for them. And yeah, for those two wins there, they're now 2 points clear of the bottom three, Bournemouth and Newcastle sitting in 18th and 19th. And it does look good for the club, you have to say, at the moment. I mean, Defoe's a doubt for this one. If he can't play, that would be a blow, because you think that maybe he's the kind of player, if say Koscielny isn't playing, and he's the kind of player who could give Mertesacker a lot of problems. But even if he's missing, it's been a great couple of wins for Sunderland. And considering where they were at the start of the season, most people thought the squad just wasn't good enough. They looked absolutely doomed, and things certainly looking up under Allardyce.
You mentioned there the two wins, and they've been typical Sam Allardyce wins, haven't they? Nothing pretty, nothing to write home about, but they've been solid at the back, which is not something we could say about Sunderland for the last two or three, maybe even four seasons. And they've been taking their chances as well when they've arrived. It's typical Sam Allardyce. Like I say, you mentioned the Palace win. That was actually their only win away from home this season. And I remember Gary Neville talking before that game, and he said the way they were going to win this was soak up a load of pressure, ride their luck, and then maybe pounce on a mistake, and that is exactly what happened. Defoe obviously scored the goal you mentioned there. They need him fit. Obviously, he's their main goal scorer. And this is the start of a really, really tough run for Arsenal. For Sunderland. They obviously go to Arsenal. Then it's Watford at home, a game they must be winning. Then we have Chelsea and City away, followed by Liverpool at home. So they're out of the bottom three at the moment, ahead of the likes of Bournemouth and their rivals Newcastle. But with that run, you'd expect them to maybe be in the bottom three again come Christmas and New Year, and traditionally teams that find themselves in that sort of position, they often struggle, don't they, come the end of the season?
Yeah, they do, yeah. I mean, when you look at those fixtures, it wouldn't be surprising to see Sunderland back in the bottom three come the new year. But, you know, I mean, I was just reading that stat there, that Sunderland have now won as many league games in six under Allardyce as they had in 17 under Advocaat. So there has been a real turnaround in recent weeks. But if they're going to win at Arsenal, they'll need to, you know, break a bit of a duck. They've only won once in 23 league games against Arsenal in recent years, so they've really struggled against the Gunners. Which way do you see this one going?
I actually think it's going to be closer than a lot of people might think, purely because under Allardyce, Sunderland will be hard to break down, and Arsenal are missing some key players. But Arsenal still will have some quality on the pitch, and I expect them to maybe nick this 1-0.
1-0, yeah, I'm actually going to completely agree with you. Like you say, I think there could be quite a lot of nerves at the Emirates, you know, and obviously he's going to be missing a lot of key players, but I think, like you say, I think they might just be able to keep Sunderland quiet, and I think they'll just edge it 1-0 as well. So both picking Arsenal to win this one 1-0. Over to Old Trafford, where West Ham are the visitors to face Manchester United. Liam, will start with the home side. Last time out was that 1-1 draw with Leicester in a big top-of-the-table clash.
Yes, and it's become the sort of game we've become accustomed to with Manchester United this season, isn't it? They didn't give too much away defensively. Smalling, again, was very good. But going forward, once again, chances were at a premium. They struggled to create them. They actually looked most dangerous in that game from set pieces, which is not very United-like. It's left them down in third when a win would have obviously lifted them top of the table, which is quite disappointing. But like I say, it was a typical Man United game that we've become accustomed to this season.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's just 3 wins in 9 in all competitions. But they are still, you know, handily placed in the table, aren't they? You know, top spot at Christmas, I think, is very much on when you look at the fixtures coming up before Christmas. West Ham at home here, who aren't in great form, as we'll discuss in a minute, and then Bournemouth away, obviously in the bottom three, and Norwich at home, another one of the promoted side. So I think certainly, even though third in the table, they're only a point off Man City and Leicester, so they're still very much in the race there. But like you say, it hasn't been, you know, the most exciting football, and I think, you know, obviously the big talking point in that game was the Vardy factor. They did, you know, allow him to score, and I think just watching the goal back, I think Ashley Young, he was the man right there. He could see Vardy, the defender in front couldn't. He couldn't really see the run, the defender in front, and then Young just tried to let him go, said, "Oh, that's the keeper's ball." And I thought it was really, I mean, I know Ashley Young isn't a defender, you know, by trade, but certainly the way he defended that was very, you know, just not tracking the run and then just sort of suggesting that someone else should have got there was very poor from him. But they did hit back through the Schweinsteiger header. He's obviously had a big part in 2 of their recent goals after the late winner against Watford, which Deeney hit over the line. So he's enjoying some good times at the moment, Schweinsteiger. And like I say, even though the results perhaps and the performances haven't been that exciting, you look at where they are on the table, it's pretty good in the Premier League. And then in Europe, they've got that massive game in midweek at Wolfsburg, Champions League qualification on the line. Any kind of slip up there, you know, would hand PSV the chance to overtake them and go through to the knockouts. And that would be massive for them if they didn't go through to the knockouts, because even though it was quite a tough looking group, no sort of real minnows in the group necessarily, you'd probably say that they are the strongest team there and they should have been winning the group. But there's been a lot of disappointing results.
Yes, and Old Trafford really isn't a happy place to be at the moment. The fans there, they have a perception of the way their side should be playing is two wingers and with plenty of flair and plenty of pace. And we're not seeing that from Louis van Gaal's team at the moment. It's strange because he's a coach with a reputation of having attacking teams. You think back to the Ajax side, the young Ajax side that won the Champions League all them years ago. He's managed Barcelona with players like Rivaldo. By Munich, he had Ribery, who did really well for him, Thomas Müller. But United, it hasn't quite happened, and it's hard to identify why. There's so many style problems wrong with United at the moment. Obviously, in games like this West Ham game, he will still play two holder midfield players in probably Schneidlin and Schweinsteiger. Maybe Carrick might come in, but they're all very similar, and they both sit there in front of the back four. And United fans are really crying out for one of those to get forward and offer some support to the attack, which the attack also isn't firing. Rooney is having big problems. It's hard to see what he's really offering the team at the moment. Van Gaal is sticking with him. He's his captain. He says he will always play. But there has to come a moment, surely, where he's rested, dropped, whatever the technical term is. It will be a drop-in. Mata on one side, he's doing okay, but again lacks a bit of pace. Van Gaal said in January he needs some pacey wingers, which explains the interest that was in Sadio Mane in the summer. It's just, there feels like there's quite a few things that need to change at United. They obviously spent big on Martial, who started with a bang up front. All of a sudden he's been shunted to the left wing, not really sure why. Depay the same, played really well against Bruges in 2 games, but he's struggling. And the team, they look a team scared to make a mistake and take risks. Therefore, it's all sideways passing, backwards passing. I mean, I think United have probably had more possession than the opponents in every single game this season, and they probably will again Saturday. West Ham will look to a counter-attack, just as they have done with most of their away games. And the way United play will probably suit West Ham, to be honest, purely because United will pass the ball in front of them. Pass the ball, it'll get given away, and West Ham can spring forward. It's just, it's like I say, it's not a happy place at the moment, United. There's booing from the Stretford end after the Moscow game, which ended in a 1-0 win. Same again with the 0-0 draw with PSV, and they can go top. You mentioned that run of 3 games of West Ham Saturday, followed by Bournemouth and Norwich, and if they take 9 points, which they could, you'd expect them to maybe go top. But I still don't think Old Trafford would be a happy place, to be honest with you. So it's interesting times at Old Trafford, it really is.
Yeah, so just as a United fan, let me just quickly ask you, say in January, if he's going in for new players, where do you think he really needs to strengthen the team?
Further forward, I think he needs pace. I'm not the biggest fan of Jesse Lingard, don't get me wrong. I think he's done well, but he's 22, and I often think that if he was going to make an impact, he would have done it before the age of 22. It feels like he's been thrown in a little bit because Depay is misfiring. On the other flank, we have Mata, who's a very talented footballer, but he lacks the necessary pace for me to be a top footballer. You look at David Silva, and you wouldn't say David Silva is necessarily quick, but he's got quick feet. He's a very dynamic player, and Mata is, he's just not in David Silva's league, and that's what United should be looking for. I mentioned Mane again. He's not, well, by any means world class, but he would offer more pace and dynamism to that United front line. So I'd say either flank, and Van Gaal himself has said that they need pace out wide. They had one obviously in Di Maria, and that didn't work out for whatever reason. They keep getting linked with Ronaldo and Bale, which obviously isn't going to happen in January. But these are the sort of players they need, players out wide that can, that might even bring the best out in Wayne Rooney. If you flank Wayne Rooney with pace, you obviously have Martial up front with possibly Rooney behind him and two quick wingers either side. That could bring out the best in Wayne Rooney if he had pace around him.
Absolutely, and Rooney, he scored 3 goals in 3 games against West Ham, so he might be looking forward to facing the Hammers. And they go to Old Trafford, not in the best of form, to be honest. They've had no win in 4 after a 7-game unbeaten run. They're down in 8th now because, you know, certainly they seem to have dropped off in recent weeks. Last time out on Sunday, home against West Brom, one-all draw there. They certainly would have fancied winning that game, I think. I know, I mean, West Brom, they did beat Arsenal the week before, but certainly to only draw 1-1 home against the Baggies, probably not good enough. They took the lead with that great Zerati free kick, fantastic, right in the top corner, and then they can certainly count themselves a little unlucky with the equaliser. It was that Lambert shot that Winston Reid diverted home, unfortunately went down as an own goal for him, so even more unlucky. But certainly just the performances in recent weeks for Slaven Bilic's side, they haven't looked as good. Like I said, down to 8th, and certainly any they haven't quite kept up the pace like, say, a Leicester have. You know, they were right there, right near the top 4 about 3-4 weeks back, but it's just dropped off in recent weeks.
I wonder if that's got a lot to do with the injuries they've got. There's 3 key players out for this game: Payet, Sakho and Enner Valencia, and the 3 of them, that they're quick, and as I mentioned earlier when talking about United, West Ham likes playing a counter-attack, especially away from home. They've done it to the likes of Arsenal this season, and without them 3, you'd have to fear for them a little bit. Sacco's obviously out for 2 months, for Valencia's had not, but Payet is the one that really hurts. He's the one that everyone scrambled to put in their fantasy football team after about 2 weeks into the season. And it's obviously brought Andy Carroll into the team with these players out. And watching them at Spurs a couple of weeks ago, they seem to really struggle to get Andy Carroll in the game. They were obviously knocking the ball up long to Andy Carroll, which you would do with his size, but no one was getting around him to get the knockdowns like someone like Payet would. And there's obviously Zarate and Lanzini, who played very well during the first half against West Brom, both of them at the weekend. But what would worry me was the way they both seemed to fade out of the game in the second half. Didn't really notice either of them, to be honest. Like, having controlled the first half, they're anonymous in the second half. And going to somewhere like Old Trafford, they're going to need them players to be on top of their game from the very first whistle. And I do also wonder whether Carroll might also play, potentially Blind's playing alongside Smalling, and whether he pulls onto Daily Blind and looks to win that physical battle. And then, like I say, the idea will be to get the likes of Zarate or Lanzini up towards Carroll to get them knockdowns like Payet would have done.
Yep, sounds like a good plan to me. We'll have to see if Bilic goes with it. But, you know, West Ham in recent years not enjoyed the best of times against United. United unbeaten in 13 Premier League meetings against them, winning 11, and West Ham have lost 7 in a row at Old Trafford in the league. So certainly points to a home victory, this one. Which way do you see it going?
It's a tough one, isn't it? Because United have not really set the world alight. They're obviously going to dominate the ball, and West Ham are going to look to spring on the counter-attack. Can United break them down? I think they might just break them down, grind them down, and a 1-0 win, I reckon, to the home side.
Yeah, I can't really see West Ham scoring in this one, to be honest. I think, like you said about the injuries there, it's just, I can't really see it. I think it might be just a little more comfortable for United. So I'm going to go for a 2-0 home win. So both picking Man U to win this one. Okie doke, down to St Mary's, where Southampton take on rock bottom Aston Villa. Liam, we'll start with the visitors this time, rooted to the foot of the table after another defeat, this time at home to Watford.
They are, and there was a really big moment in their game where their captain, Micah Richards, he equalised to make it 1-1, and he tries to G up the crowd and G up his team. He'd been very vocal during the week, accusing players of not putting in effort and having enough bottle. He makes it 1-1, and you think, is this the turning point? Are they going to go and beat Watford now and carry on? But it didn't happen. The response to that was poor. They ended up losing 3-2. That's made it 13 games without a win now, and it's really hard to see where they go. They're 7 points from safety. There's a lot of games still to play, a lot of points still to be won, obviously, but 7 points for a team like Villa, they're offering nothing. It looks a mammoth total to make up already, doesn't it?
It does, absolutely, yeah. And I mean, no team, I mean, just reading this stat, no team has ever stayed up after managing 5 points or fewer from their opening 14 games. So it does really look very, very bleak for Villa. And, you know, you look at what Sunderland did, you know, they've now won back-to-back games. They've pulled, you know, 7 points clear of Villa now, like you said there. So things really looking bad for Villa. Yeah, 13 games without a win is a horrendous run. And only 2 points in that time as well. I mean, one of those was that goalless draw with Man City. The other one the draw with Sunderland, who are obviously one of the fellow strugglers there. So they've been horrendous recently, especially away from home. And, you know, it was a decent start for Emigard, wasn't it? That goalless draw with City, but, you know, they clung on in that game. City could have easily had a couple of goals. They missed some sitters, and then in Gard's second and third games, they've shipped 7 goals, 4 at Everton, 3 at home against a Watford team who, you know, for the most part this season have really struggled for goals. They've been fairly solid defensively, Watford, but they haven't really scored that many at all. And to concede 3 the way they did, I mean, some of the goals, they were just comically bad. I mean, Igalo's one, he looked offside, but, you know, Kieran Richardson, lazy getting out, played him on, and the Hutton own goal was obviously a comical moment. The way, I mean, I know he was trying to get in the interception there, but surely you've got to find somewhere else apart from the bottom corner to put it. So simply not good enough. And I just think that 7 goals in 2 games conceded, and you look at the next 2 fixtures as well, Southampton away. Southampton usually quite strong at home, not obviously in midweek against Liverpool, but they're usually quite strong at home. And then Arsenal at home next weekend. So the next 2 games look very difficult. You just see more goals being shipped and can't really see them climbing the table anytime soon.
Especially without a player like Jack Grealish, who is arguably their most creative and exciting player. I mean, Gard's stance is admirable. We all know Grealish antics. We don't agree with him, but he's a great player, and I'm not sure banishing him is helping anyone, really. I mean, is he going to learn from that, training with the reserves and things like that? I'm not too sure. And it's not just Grealish. They need to strengthen during January transfer window. And Randy Lerner, will he give Gard the funds? They need players of proven Premier League ability. They brought in a lot of French players, maybe good footballers, but not proven Premier League footballers. And one of those is Charlie Austin, who I believe they've been linked with, and he proved himself last year at QPR. Almost single-handedly kept QPR up with his goals, didn't he? But he's obviously now been linked with Southampton, and the position Southampton find themselves in, they'd probably fancy themselves ahead of Villa to sign him, wouldn't they?
Absolutely, yeah. Southampton, I think, would be certainly a more attractive proposition for Charlie Austin. Whether, I'm not sure if Southampton necessarily need another striker. I mean, Pella and, you know, Mane, Shane Long, Jay Rodriguez still injured. They've got a lot of options there, Southampton. But, you know, Southampton's last game in midweek, just mentioned it briefly there, they had Liverpool, League Cup quarterfinals, massive game for the club to potentially get through to the semis, and they take the lead inside 45 seconds, I think it was. Sadio Mane, good header at the back post, really poor defending from Moreno. But then Liverpool, you know, they've been excellent, especially away from home under Jurgen Klopp, and they score 6 in the way they did. It was a tremendous display from Liverpool, you have to say. And I mean, Southampton, they're just complete capitulation from them. But I mean, looking at some of the goals back, I mean, the first two especially from Sturridge, both, you know, there's a couple of brilliant passes to get him in both times from Joe Allen and Emre Can. But both goals, you look at Stecklenburg in the goal, and I think you should have easily kept both of those out. I mean, the first one, sort of, it was a tight angle. Sturridge did pick out the corner, but I think he's got to be doing better, the goalkeeper there. And the second one goes under Stecklenburg's body. So did the third. You have to say there was that little touch from Origi, which maybe put him off a bit. And once it was 3-1 like that in the first half, the game was up, really, because Southampton had to chase the game. And Liverpool, the way they're playing at the moment away from home, especially when they get given space to counter-attack, it was only going to go one way. 6, obviously, I think it was the biggest ever defeat they've had at St Mary's. So, huge, huge defeat for the club. And I think certainly, back to Stecklenburg, it's Southampton, they have really missed Fraser Forster in goal there. He was a really, really excellent signing when they got him from Celtic. But he's been out for so long now with that injury. And I think they'll be really glad to get him back when he does come back.
Massively, and as well as that Liverpool sort of hammering they've lost their last 2 in the Premier League. And you mentioned Stecklenburg there. Southampton last year were famed for their how little goals they conceded, how many clean sheets they kept. Fonte was fantastic. This time last year they've conceded 10 goals. Fast forward 12 months they've conceded 17, which is quite a lot, really. 7 doesn't sound a lot, but it's a lot of goals to be shipping at the same point. And I just wonder whether they're almost paying the price now. They've defied the odds for so long, selling so many of their key players, the likes of Klein, Schneiderlin, Lallana, Lambert. All these players have gone, and it's a lot of key players to lose. And I just wonder whether maybe they're down in 10th now. This time last year, they were top, near the top anyway, battling for Champions League places. And I just wonder whether halfway is where we're going to see Southampton finish this season. Purely because, like I say, they've lost so many quality players over the last 3 summers. It was bound to catch up with them. And I think maybe that is what's happening now.
Yeah, potentially, yeah. I mean, the league table doesn't make great reading. Like you said, it's back-to-back league defeats. Now, they haven't actually lost more than 2 league games in a row since last December. And when you look at the league table, they're down to 10th now, you know, in danger of dropping into the bottom half, 7 points off the top 4. And they certainly, I mean, when you see teams like Liverpool, Spurs, You know, those teams really pushing up towards the top. You can't really pick Southampton as potentially a top four contender this year. They threatened it last season, then at some points this season they've looked like they might join the party again. But yeah, recent weeks it hasn't looked too good for them, and maybe just another solid top half finish on the cards. And I think certainly there should be goals in this one though, against Villa. The last sort of four games at St Mary's against Villa have averaged 5.5 goals a game. And of course, when they met last season at St Mary's, it was that famous day for Mane when he got the fastest hat-trick ever. So more goals this time?
I think so. With the greatest respect, if you've just been fresh 6-1, the next team you want to play is Aston Villa, really, isn't it? A side that are really badly struggling. Southampton, everything I said, that they are struggling. They're still good going forward. They've got pace, they've got creativity with the likes of Tadic and Mane, you mentioned, Pella up front. I fancy them to win this and win this comfortably 3-0.
3-0, yeah. I think it'll be a Southampton win as well. Pella is a slight doubt for this one. Hopefully he's fit, because well, for Southampton especially, he's usually very good at home, scores a lot of goals at St Mary's. And yeah, I think Villa might try and make it difficult in Southampton. I don't know if they'll put three past them. I'm going to go for a 2-0 win, but certainly expect the Saints to win this one. So both see Southampton winning this one fairly comfortably. Righty-ho, over to the Liberty Stadium where Swansea host high-flying Leicester. Liam, we've got to start with the visitors in that game with Manchester United. Jamie Vardy broke the record.
He did indeed. They may have lost top spot, but it's a good draw against a side that have been very hard to break down. You mentioned Jamie Vardy there. His triumph, it's been amazing, hasn't it? No one would have predicted him to do that. It's a great record and one that's going to be very, very tough to break. The United game was interesting because we've been used to Leicester this season playing with flair, the likes of Mahrez, the likes of Vardy on the break, pace, trickery. But it was a more solid performance from them this time. I thought Danny Drinkwater in midfield stood out. He won a lot of tackles, made a lot of decent passes. The one worrying aspect for me was defensively. They didn't really look to have a leader, which was strange when you have a combination of Morgan and Hoof, two big centre-backs. But United got a lot of joy from corners. The goal come from a corner. Kasper Schmeichel stayed in his line when he possibly could have come and caught it. But that might worry Ranieri that they might have a weakness identified now and teams will start to pump balls in the box, because no one really looked to take control of the situation. And as I say, with two big centre-backs like they've got, you'd expect them to be solid. And that was the one worrying aspect. But hey, another draw and they're still right at the top, aren't they?
Absolutely, and they've still only lost once all season, which is, you know, level with Spurs as the fewest defeats in the league there. They did, obviously, just behind Man City on goal difference now at the top there. But as for Vardy, you know, it was another very cool finish. And I think what's most impressed me with some of his goals has been, you know, he's been on the run and he's had to take, and his first touch has always been bang on for just like setting himself up for a shot. I think United could have defended it better, but you know, that's his 13 goals in those 11 straight games he's scored in, 14 goals all season. And those goals, you know, they've actually won Leicester 14 points, which is more than any other player. So his goals have been really crucial. I saw a stat about Harry Kane that he scored 8 goals in 8 games, but those 8 goals have only contributed to maybe 1 point, I think. So he's scoring in games where Spurs, you know, other players contributing as well. But for Leicester, Vardy is just doing so much for them. 14 Premier League goals in a season, that's more than any Leicester player has ever managed before. Tony Cotty got 13 in 1999-2000, and he's done that with only 14 games of the season played. So an incredible record for Leicester. You know, they're the only team to score in all 14 league games as well. Only 2 clean sheets, like you said, they do probably need to improve defensively, but it's just an incredible achievement for Vardy and for Leicester themselves.
It is, and now the slight fear is the party pooper in me, are the wheels going to fall off now? They obviously go to Swansea, not in great form, but the Liberty Stadium is still a tough place to go. And then after that, it's Chelsea at home, Everton away, Liverpool away, and then Man City at home to finish the year. The fear is the wheels will fall off, but if they keep playing how they're playing, they're hard to beat. They keep doing that. On the flip side, if they come out of that smelling of roses, then people are going to have to stand up and accept that Leicester are probably genuine top four contenders.
Absolutely, yeah. It could be interesting in January, you know, to see if they are still, you know, sort of maybe within sort of 3-4 points at the top, maybe even at the top themselves. I mean, I can't really see it given those fixtures you just mentioned. There's a really tough end to the sort of the half season. But if they are still there or thereabouts, which, you know, they still won't be that far off, even if they go on a bad run. It'll be interesting to see what stance the owners takes in terms of January signings. Will they feel, I mean, I'm sure Ranieri will say, look, there's a real chance that we can get into the top four if maybe you just sign one or two marquee players. It'd be very, very interesting to see. And I think that certainly Leicester have been doing so well, but the same can't be said of Swansea, unfortunately. It's just one win in 10 for them. They lost 1-0 at Liverpool last weekend, Which, you know, they didn't play too badly in that game, watching it back. There was not many chances in that game. Liverpool at home, the games at home at Anfield under Jurgen Klopp haven't been really as exciting as when they go away from home. And Swansea, they did frustrate Liverpool in that, and there was, I think, only two shots in target the whole game. One of those was Milner's penalty, which was the decisive goal. And certainly, I think Swansea, they felt very hard done by with the decision there. Neil Taylor jumped up, tried to block the cross, and I can see why it was given. His arms were away from his body. There was no real reason. I mean, when you jump like that, your arms, you're not going to be able to stay by your side because you need them to elevate. But certainly, they were quite a long way away from his body, and it wasn't like he was a yard away. It was a good 3-4 yards, maybe, the distance. And I can see why it was given. Very, very harsh, all the same. But, you know, that proved decisive. In the end, Milner stuck the penalty away, and Swansea, they just couldn't really create much down the other end. So, like I said, 1-10. That win was against Aston Villa as well, where they got the late goal to win there. And Villa are rubbish anyway, so it wasn't really much. You know, it's not like that was a great win in itself, because Villa down there at the bottom. And look where Swansea are on the table now, 15th, just 4 points from the drop zone. It was such a strong start to the season back in August, but 1-10 since then. And yeah, 15th in the table. It's certainly not gone well in recent weeks.
No, I remember their win over Manchester United. I think that was late August, possibly early September, and everything looked rosy there, didn't it? And then, like you say, all of a sudden, 4 points off relegation. I think Gary Monk's bound to be worried, because now they're on a poor run, and now all of a sudden they've got the top two, Leicester this week, then Manchester City next week. And January really cannot come quickly enough for them. They've got Gomez, or they've been playing Gomez up front. He's now got no goals in 10. And one stat caught my eye was that he's been caught offside over twice as much as any other Premier League player. He's since been replaced in the side by Adair, who's still waiting for his first goal. So obviously in January they need a striker or two, someone probably proven. The likes of Charlie Austin have been linked with Aston Villa and Southampton, but Swansea could do a lot worse than put some money on the table to Queen's Park Rangers for him. I just think it's hard.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
To know what's gone wrong at Swansea, Gary Monk last season had a really good season. He started well this season, and then we had the madness last week of him dropping Montero and Sigurdsson, and you're thinking he looks like a man under pressure at the moment, and he needs a win badly. Whether it can come in the next 2 or 3 weeks, who can tell? I mean, if they can beat Leicester, maybe they'll go on a run, but it doesn't look good for Gary Monk at the moment.
It doesn't. I think it's interesting to compare Swansea and Leicester this season, because they're two sides who really haven't been affected by injuries at all. I mean, Matty James for Leicester has been the only player that's been missing for them, you know, consistently throughout the season. Swansea, you know, regularly I look at the injuries and they often have no injuries to deal with. And if you said at the start of the season, right, Swansea and Leicester, you know, they're going to have clean bills of health up until Christmas or December at least, and who would you expect out of the two to make a top four charge? You would have said Swansea, wouldn't you, after after last season? I mean, I know Leicester finished, you know, obviously the end of last season very well, but it's weird how they've gone in completely different directions with clean bills of health. And it's interesting that how much Swansea have struggled, considering, you know, just how, you know, they've had a clean bill of health all season, and it's just their players have really dropped off. Like the Gomez stat you mentioned there, I think he's a real donkey. I just think that he's had little flashes in the pan here and there where he'll go on, you know, 3-4 game scoring streaks or whatever, but when you watch him, I mean, that offside stat, getting caught, you know, twice as many as any other player, that's just stupidity, isn't it? I mean, like, there's running down the channels and trying to, you know, beat the offside trap, but getting caught offside that many times, you do wonder sometimes. And Edair, like you said, he's still waiting for his first goal. Yeah, I completely agree. They do need a striker in January, and I think they could certainly struggle this weekend. What's your prediction?
Yeah, Leicester full of confidence, and with the pace that they've got on the side, Swansea are confidence on the floor. I can see Leicester winning this one 2-1.
Yeah, I think it's, for so many weeks sort of earlier in the season, we kept saying maybe Leicester's bubble will burst, but I think it'll be another win for the Foxes here. I think certainly Swansea, they might cause them some problems, and they did look a little better last week against Liverpool. I think it's just the creating chances. Maybe they might be able to take advantage of, you know, Leicester's slightly more shaky defence, but I just think Leicester will just outscore them, to be honest, and I'm going to go for a 3-1 Leicester win. So both back in the away side to win this one. Righty-ho. At Vicarage Road, it's a match between two of the promoted sides as Watford welcome Norwich. Liam, will start with the Hornets up to 11th after that 3-2 win at Villa.
They are, and I think it's a win that would have really pleased their manager, Flores. They showed a lot of character in that. There was a moment when Micah Richards, he scored, made it 1-1. The Villa captain lifted the Villa crowd, lifted the Villa players, and you thought Watford might crumble here, but to their credit, they held on, they dug in deep, and they ended up winning the game comfortably 3-2, to be fair. The scoreline looks close, but Watford were more than worthy winners, and it shows the sort of character and bottle to suggest that they're ready to hang around in the Premier League. There are a lot of people's favourites to go down in the summer. They added, I think it was about 14 or 15 players, which is a lot of players, obviously, to get to know each other and get tactics sorted. But to be fair to them, they showed some good character, and that win was their fifth of the season. It's the same as they managed during their last season in the Premier League in 2006-2007, and everything's looking rosy for them at the moment.
Absolutely, yeah. Nine clear of the drop zone now, and they could move into the top half this weekend. And Deeney and Igalo again on the score sheet at Villa Park. They look very, very good together, those two. Deeney really starting to find his feet now. He had that, you know, real dry spell. It was his first Premier League season. Everyone thought he was going to come in and really adapt well to the Premier League, but he took his time. But now he's now scored in four of the last five and last three games in a row as well. No Watford player has ever scored in four straight Premier League games, so he's chasing a bit of history there this weekend. And he does seem to work so well with Igalo, doesn't he? That, I mean, the two of them have created 23 goal scoring chances for each other, which is more than any other combo in the Premier League. So it just shows how well they work together. And I think watching them play together, it's fantastic. They're two really dynamic strikers, and Deeney especially. I think it's good to see Deeney scoring goals, because he's been so good in the Championship. I've watched a lot of Championship football the last couple of years, and he was a fantastic striker, and it's good to see him scoring goals. And it was a great moment for him as well, scoring against Villa. He'd already said how much it would have meant to him, because it's his home city, Birmingham, and he said it would have meant loads to him to score, and he did, and he's doing fantastically. Watford doing really well, and like you said, they look very much set for a safe season this year.
But what you were saying about Deeney and Igalo there, it makes it all the more confusing as to why they've only scored four home goals all season. I mean, three in the last two, so they might be improving, but four overall. It's hard to put your finger on why, really. Like you say, the understanding between the two of them looks really good. They've got some creative midfielders behind them. So it really is difficult to see why there is such a stat. But against the Norwich side that are struggling, they'll probably fancy their chances of adding a few more to their tally, won't they?
Absolutely, yeah. And I think if you look at Watford's next two fixtures, they've got Norwich and Sunderland. Norwich at home this weekend, and then Sunderland away. So I think they'll certainly fancy them pushing into the top half. And then they do have a really difficult end to the year, though. Liverpool at home, Chelsea away, Spurs at home in their last three games. So if they can get some points there, maybe get 4 points in their next two as well, they just put themselves in quite a safe position going into the new year, then there's certain things are looking good for them going into 2016 and hopefully staying up for another Premier League season. And like I said, they'll fancy themselves against Norwich this week. And you mentioned the sort of lack of home goals there, but, you know, Norwich, I think they'll fancy, you know, finding the net against them. Obviously, a club that they came up with from the Championship last year. Norwich last weekend, they come into this on the back of a good result, though. They didn't win, but they got a draw at home to Arsenal, which is an impressive result. I know Arsenal, you know, they'd lost to West Brom the week before, but even so, for Norwich to get a point at home to them, very, very impressive. They fell behind to that Ozil goal, which was a mistake from John Ruddy, and there was a loose touch in midfield. It got pounced on by Sanchez, and Ozil stuck it away well. But then Lewis Graben came up with the goal shortly before half time. Big goal for him as well, because, you know, he at the start of the season he wasn't in the team for Norwich. He had that moment where he went, I think it was AWOL after, I think he got left out of the squad for a cup tie against Rotherham. He went AWOL, got, you know, suspended by the club, and it looked like he might potentially be on his way in January if he couldn't sort things out. But he's now come in, got the goal there, which is good for him. It's very poor defending. I think Gabriel tried to nick the ball in front of him. Graben was just too clever, rolled off him, stuck it away well, and good for him to get a goal. And you wonder if he's now going to become Norwich's main striker, because they've struggled to really pick one player who's going to lead the line. It started with Cameron Jerome, then Mbakani played a couple of games in there, and now Graben seems to have got the place. Alex Neil can't really decide who wants to play up there. So it was a good result for Norwich, but it's only one win in nine. They lost five of those. Only 3 points above the bottom three. So it was a good result, but they just need a few more points, a couple more wins, really.
You mentioned Graben there, but it's at the other end of the pitch for me where Norwich have big problems. One clean sheet all season, which is a joint league low with Bournemouth. And you mentioned the Ruddy mistake there. It's not his first this season. There was another one at Manchester City where he's come racing off his line, tried to retrieve a situation, and Russell Martins ended up handballing, and they lose in the last minute. Would have been a great point at City. by his own admission, John Ruddy has been out of form, and it's a strange one because I've always had John Ruddy down as a solid goalkeeper. He's been in England squads as the number three goalkeeper. He's always been steady. He looks very erratic at the moment, and it's something that they're going to have to change because the upcoming fixtures, they look ominous. Watford are an improving side, especially at home. That's followed by Everton at home, Man United away, Spurs away, and then it's a massive game against Villa. You can see that being a real six-pointer. Like I say, Ruddy is going to have to improve. Defensively, they're going to have to improve and put a few more clean sheets on the board if they are going to stay in the Premier League.
Absolutely, yeah. And when you look at Norwich's record away from home, it doesn't read too well either. They've only won once away from home all season. That was their first away game back in August when they won 3-1 at Sunderland. Since then, drawn 2, lost 4, and lost the last 3 as well. So they haven't really played very well away from home in recent weeks. But which way do you see this one going?
I think it's going to be quite tight, this one. I'm not sure it's going to be high on entertainment. I think Watford are going to squeeze this one 1-0.
1-0, yeah. I'm going to back the Hornets by a goal as well. I think I'm just going to go for a few more. I'm going to go for a 2-1 home win. So both picking Watford to win this one. Okay, to the Hawthorns for the last of the 3pm kickoffs, and it's West Brom against Spurs. Liam, we'll start with the away side. It's line fifth, but a 0-0 draw with Chelsea last Sunday.
It was, and it was a strange game, wasn't it? Because we've seen Spurs this season attack the likes of Manchester City and Arsenal and cause big problems. They couldn't do that against Chelsea, whether it was a combination of Chelsea perhaps defending well. I think they did. They haven't this season much, but they did defend well at White Hart Lane. I think the other problem was the miles that Spurs have covered, flying to Azerbaijan and back, not getting back till Friday. Takes a lot out of the body, and they seem particularly leggy in the second half, Spurs, so that might explain that. But on the plus side, it's a clean sheet. Pochettino has done fantastic work there. They look a well-organised, a well-drilled unit. It's very un-Spurs-like, if you get what I mean, because they've famously played entertaining football but been very leaky at the other end, and he's come in and seemed to identify that. They're now very hard to beat. They're still entertaining going forward, but they're hard to beat as well. It's another string to their bow and something that Spurs have really needed over the last few years, and Pochettino looks to have implemented it.
Yeah, yeah, and they're now unbeaten in 13 league games since that opening day defeat to Manchester United. That's their best ever unbeaten run in the Premier League, and their best run in the top flight since March 1985, when they went 14 games unbeaten, a record they can match, you know, by avoiding defeat this weekend. It's been just very, very solid, and I think the game against Chelsea, like you said, it's one they, I think, especially given how, you know, Chelsea have struggled this season, that they would have fancied maybe beating them. You know, they've beaten City 4-1 at home this year, so I think they would have fancied it. But, you know, a 0-0 draw certainly isn't the worst result. Keeps that unbeaten run going. And no goals for Kane in that one, but he has scored 8 goals in 8 games, and he likes playing West Brom. He scored 3-2 against them, so he'll fancy scoring this weekend. The only thing with Spurs, I would say, is that away from home, they've got the 13th best record in the league this season. They've only won 2 games away from home all season. They've only played 6 compared to 8 at home, but even so, if they want to be considered real, you know, top 4, even maybe title contenders this year, they just need to pick up a few more wins away from home. Only 2 wins out of 6, not quite good enough if they're really going to mount a proper top 4 charge.
And if they're going to do that, the next 5 games on paper look perfect. Obviously, there's West Brom on Saturday, and that's followed by Newcastle at home, Southampton away, who have been hammered by City and Liverpool recently, Norwich at home, and Watford away. And if Spurs are going to finish in the top 4, or like you say, challenge for the title, it's open this season. Teams look like they're dropping points everywhere, so it's open for teams like Spurs, teams like Liverpool. If they're going to do it, they need to be picking up points at the Hawthorns on Saturday. And like I say, I listed them 4 other fixtures there as well. And I think with the 5 games they've got before 2016 comes in, I think they really need to be looking to get into that top 4. I think there'll be a lot of Spurs fans disappointed if they don't make that happen.
Yeah, given the way they have played and, like you said, how some teams have struggled, you know, Chelsea's still a long way off. I mean, I think for Spurs, just avoiding defeat last week was probably a good thing, because Chelsea, obviously, they're trying to string together some sort of really good run to push back towards the top 4. And I think it's going to be an interesting race. You know, we still maybe expect Leicester to drop out, and between then you've got probably Spurs and Liverpool. It's going to be an interesting battle. Liverpool currently 2 points behind Spurs. Spurs there with 25. They're only 4 points off the top even after that draw last week. So things still looking good for them. And I think they'll definitely fancy their chances against the West Brom side, who, you know, 2 weeks ago they beat the other North London team, Arsenal, but they couldn't really follow that up last week. A 1-1 draw at West Ham leaves them 13th. It's not the worst result. They did well to fight back. You know, the only goal they did concede in that game was that excellent Zarate free kick right in the top corner. Nothing Myhill could do about that. But then on the flip side, you could say that they didn't create all that much in the game, and the goal they did get from Ricky Lambert came on, and his shot was diverted home by Winston Reid, and that there was a bit of luck to that as well. So it was not too much in the game. I mean, last Sunday, you had that Spurs-Chelsea game, the West Brom game, and the Norwich game. all three of those on, you know, the triple header Sunday. None of them really excited, to be honest, but it was still an okay result. No clean sheet there, but when you actually look at Tony Pulis's record since he was installed as West Brom boss back in January, the Baggies have had more clean sheets, 16 that is, than any other Premier League team. So he's come in, does what he does best, Pulis, you know, really tighten them up at the back, and they're eight above the drop zone as things stand. They look fairly safe, West Brom. I don't think they're not really going to mount a charge for a sort of top eight place, but equally you can't really see them being dragged down to the bottom this year.
You mentioned Pulis's clean sheet record there, that's fantastic, but he's bound to be scratching his head a little bit when he looks at the fact that his side have conceded 13 at home this season, which is more than any other team in the league. I suppose having had a look at their fixtures might explain it a little bit. They've played City, Chelsea, Everton, Leicester, Arsenal last weekend, and now Spurs coming up, so they'll feel like the fixtures computer's dealt them a bit of bad luck there. But coming up after that, it's the likes of Bournemouth and Newcastle, so Pulis will maybe be expecting that to even itself out, and perhaps their goals against tally at home will not creep up too high in second half of the season, which is a big positive for them.
Yeah, that is, yeah, when you look at those, they've certainly played, yes, most of the big boys at home, which means that then obviously they'll have to go to those teams, you know, away from home in the second half, which will be very difficult. But then, you know, equally you can say that the teams they play at home will be a lot easier, like I said, the likes of Bournemouth and some of the other teams at the bottom there. And they have actually won two of the last three at home, so they have improved in recent weeks. And it's a near fully fit squad he's got there. Claudio Jakob suspended this weekend, which will be a blow. He's a key player for them in that sort of defensive midfield role, but I think that they might fancy their chances here. Which way do you see it go?
I can see this being a very tight, tetchy affair, and I think Tony Pulis will get the sort of result he likes, a 0-0 draw.
I think Spurs, they'll be disappointed how they played against Chelsea last week. They haven't had a midweek game this week. I think they'll be much more refreshed. I'm going to back them to win this one 2-0. So we've got one draw and a Spurs win. Saturday's evening kickoff this week is at Stamford Bridge with Chelsea up against Bournemouth. Liam, we'll start with the visitors this time. Last time out, really excellent game against Everton. Finished 3-3.
Great game, wasn't it? Not great for the two managers, Roberto Martinez and Eddie Howe, but we loved it. From a Bournemouth point of view, Eddie Howe will have been bitterly disappointed with the way his side defended. A couple of the goals, the one for Lukaku, he's been allowed to turn far too easily. But they've shown some good character, haven't they? They're usually fast starters in a game, Bournemouth. 10 of their 17 goals this season have come in the first 30 minutes, but all three of the goals they scored on Saturday came in the last 10 minutes, and in fact Stanislas's second goal, that was timed at 97 minutes and 13 seconds, which is the latest in the Premier League this season. So it shows that Bournemouth have got a bit of character and a bit of steel about them that maybe we thought they didn't have.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean Martinez, he was disappointed how late that goal came, and once Barkley had scored his goal, and, you know, you thought that was probably the last kick of the game, but Everton's fans probably haven't done themselves any favours, because they came on the pitch, the Everton fans, and that obviously took quite a while to sort out, and that might be why the referee thought, right, we'll just add another minute on here, because, you know, the Everton fans came on and then it delayed it and delayed it. I think that might have worked in against Everton in the end. But as for Bournemouth, you know, it leaves them, they're still in the bottom three, 2 points from safety. You know, Sunderland beating Stoke last weekend wasn't good for them. And Bournemouth, I think, you look at their end of the year, it's very, very difficult. I mean, Chelsea, we know Chelsea haven't been as good as they can be this year, but still, a trip to Stamford Bridge is very difficult here. And then Manchester United and Arsenal away in three of their last five games this year as well. And then the other two are West Brom away and Crystal Palace at home, which both of those look really difficult as well. It's a really tough end to the year for them. And I certainly think they could, you know, come 2016, they could be maybe sort of 4, 5, 6 points from safety, and maybe, depending on, I mean, Villa, we don't expect them to pick up many points either, but I think maybe Bournemouth, I mean, they're 18th, they're above Newcastle at the moment, but I'd be very surprised if they're out of the bottom three come the new year. I think the only real positive for them, you know, coming into this game, they've actually had a really good record in London in recent times. They've won on four of their last five league trips to London, so maybe they like playing in the capital, but I think it's going to be a really tough ask against Chelsea here.
It is, and last time out, Chelsea, it was a 0-0 draw at Spurs. It wasn't a great watch, was it? But you get the feeling that Mourinho would have been pleased with what he saw. He didn't park the bus, like he famously said once before, but it wasn't far away from that, and they needed that, because they've conceded 23 goals this season, Chelsea, and that's relegation form, 23 goals. That's far too many, and very un-Chelsea and un-Mourinho-like. John Terry might be back for this game. That'll be a big plus. I know he's been out of form, but they always look a more compact, solid unit with him in there. Cahill's just signed a new contract, which is another plus. And the big news for me is Courtois' nearing fitness, and if he can be fit, that's a massive plus. Begovic is a good goalkeeper, solid enough, decent, but I wonder whether he was at his level at Stoke. He's a number one goalkeeper at Stoke, but with the greatest respect, any higher and you're looking at as a deputy, a place on the bench. Courtois is a world class goalkeeper, and he'll instill some confidence into that defence that's been badly lacking. And the Spurs game seems to suggest that maybe things from a defensive point of view are changing. They still have problems further forward, but at least defensively things might be sorting themselves out.
Yeah, they did look more solid in that one, especially, I mean, Spurs in some of the games this year, they've been excellent. I mean, the week before, Spurs 4-1 against West Ham, they were fantastic in that game. They beat City by the same scoreline at White Hart Lane as well. I think for Chelsea to shut them down the way it did, Kane didn't have much luck. I think it was a very good defensive performance, but further forward, like you just mentioned there, again, so many players disappointing. I mean, Costa was benched by Mourinho, and then he went out to warm up, looked like he might be coming on, then threw his bib seemingly in the direction of his managers. Doesn't seem very happy there at all. I mean, coming into this game, if Costa hasn't resolved his issues there, he might not be playing again. Falcao and Remy, the other two strikers, they're both doubts for this one. So you wonder who might actually be playing up front. They've actually, you know, they've been linked with Emmanuel Adebayor. I saw a report linking them with him because, you know, he's a striker who is available at the moment. He hasn't really played this year, but there's still some wage issues with Spurs there. That would be it seems a bit desperate if they were to go for him. And it's some of the other players as well. I mean, Fabregas, he had another absolute shocker in that Spurs game. So there was a highlights video I saw of some of the things he did in that game. Was one free kick, he just kicked it out of play. One, he smacked his own teammate Willian in the head when he was trying to take a quick free kick, and lost the ball a couple of other times. Just really, really poor. And Hazard as well, he's still yet to score this season. No goals in 24 games in all competitions. It is a staggering record for someone who was, for me, clearly the best player in the Premier League last year. And it's amazing how much he's dipped off. So, I mean, going forward, Chelsea, they really do need to maybe just some new faces in there. Interesting to see what they do in January. But, you know, the result itself, only a point, leaves them still down there in 14th, 12 points off the top four, 14 behind, you know, the top of the table. It's gonna take something monumental for them to even get into the top four race this year. And the way their attacking players are going, I just can't really see them doing it.
No, I agree. But there is a chance to get that feel-good factor back if Mourinho can somehow inspire them underperforming players, the likes of Fabregas, Costa, Hazard, you just mentioned. They've all been so badly below par, it's untrue. But like I just mentioned, there is a real chance now, because they've fancied their chances of beating Bournemouth, a struggling Bournemouth side at home. And then that's followed by they've got home games against Sunderland and Watford. Again, teams you'd expect them to beat. And then even trips to Leicester and Man United on paper, not easy trips, but players that Chelsea have, the calibre of players they've got, they really could be getting points and victories in these places. And all of a sudden, if they can put four or five wins on the board, all of a sudden it's a different place, and the players are happy, and they could then challenge for the top four. The title was obviously out of reach in my opinion, but like I say, if they can string four or five wins together, starting with Bournemouth on Saturday before the end, before we get into 2016, then top four is definitely not out of the question.
No, and they've got, I mean, I think you sort of mentioned the chance there to sort of maybe get the club feeling good again. If they've got a massive game in midweek next week against Porto, which, you know, if they lose that game, it is at home to Porto, you'd probably expect them to avoid, all they need to do is avoid defeat to, you know, guarantee their place. But if they do lose, it opens the door for Dynamo Kiev, who just need to beat Maccabi, who have been, you know, by far the weakest team in that group. So that's a massive game for them. They'll certainly, I mean, they don't want to, you know, take Bournemouth too lightly here. We know Bournemouth can play some good stuff, but you do just wonder if maybe they might be thinking a bit ahead to that Porto game, because at this stage of the season, when it's been going so badly in the Premier League, they can't go out of Europe as well. That would just be disastrous for the team. But one thing for Chelsea is that their record at home against sort of promoted teams is just superb. They've won unbeaten in their last 43 home matches against promoted teams, winning 37 of those back to like 2001 when they lost to Charlton. So promoted teams do not do breach. Do you see Bournemouth breaking that trend?
Sadly for Bournemouth, I don't. And I actually think this might be the weekend where Hazard finally turns up this season and shows his true class. I could see him getting both goals in a 2-0 win for Chelsea.
2-0, yeah. I think Bournemouth might get something from this. Chelsea, I think Bournemouth, they can always score a goal. They've got threatening players. The style of play they do, they might get a goal. But I think it'll be very comfortable for Chelsea. I'm going to go for a 3-1 win. So both picking Chelsea to win this one by two goals. Just the one game on Sunday this week, and it's up in the northeast as Newcastle welcome red-hot Liverpool. Liam, we'll start with the visitors' massive win midweek, 6-1 at Southampton in the League Cup.
It was, and it came off the back of that narrow, gritty win against Swansea, and I think that showed the two signs that Liverpool have got under Klopp now. They can battle and they can nick a 1-0, a dirty 1-0 if needs be, and then they can go and demolish a side. I mean, they were tremendous at Southampton. Had a nightmare start, didn't they? I think Mane scored within a minute down on the south coast, but after that it was all about Liverpool. Sturridge came back, scored some goals. Origi got himself a hat-trick, will do wonders for his confidence because he struggled since he arrived from Lille in the summer, and they're obviously now in the semi-finals, and a lot of people undervalue the League Cup as a competition, but it was the first thing Jose Mourinho won when he came to this country, and look what he went on to do with Chelsea and has done with Chelsea since. And if Klopp can maybe get that winning feeling going at Liverpool, you know, there's positive vibes around Anfield at the moment, and it's easy to see why.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, in the semi-finals, two teams they would have wanted to avoid probably out of the two, Everton and Man City. I mean, Everton would have been nice, you know, the derby, but Stoke is the one that those three teams all wanted, and Liverpool were the team to get them. I think they got the second leg at home as well, so it's a very nice draw in the semis, and obviously Klopp, he would love an early trophy if he could get that under his belt. You know, he could end that sort of 3-year hoodoo for a trophy almost within like a couple of months of coming in. And yeah, and it's now 7 wins in 8 games in all competitions for Liverpool. Like you say, two completely different games in the past sort of week or so. Against Swansea, they weren't at their best at all. And to be honest, they have been better in generally away from home under Jurgen Klopp. You know, the week before they had that amazing performance at Man City where they completely tore the league leaders apart. Against Swansea, much more difficult. Their only shot on target was, in fact, James Milner's penalty, which was debatable in itself. You know, you could have easily seen it not given. Taylor, you know, certainly wasn't trying to handle the ball, but you can't really put your arms that far away from your body. And a cool penalty from Milner. And then in midweek, they were just superb against Southampton, especially, like you say, after falling behind. And the one thing everyone has noticed in this team under Klopp is just how much more active they are, closing the ball down. And there's a stat here that they've averaged 6.9 kilometres more and 84 sprints more per game under Klopp than they were doing with Rodgers in the Premier League this season. So it's noticeable on the eye. The stats back it up as well, that they're just so much more active going forward. And at the moment, teams they're playing, especially away from home, it seems, just don't know what to do really. That they get completely hounded. They don't seem to quite have the quick passing to be able to, you know, ping it around the Liverpool players and start a break. And the way they're playing at the moment, Sturridge obviously returning in midweek, looking excellent there. And Origi as well, like you say, he hasn't been great, but a hat-trick for him. I mean, one of the goals, he barely touched it, but he's been credited with it. And they've got Benteke fit as well. Coutinho, he missed out in midweek, but he should be back this weekend as well. And yeah, things looking rosy for the Reds.
The big one for me there is the one you highlighted, is Daniel Sturridge. There's obviously been big question marks over him. David Fairclough, super sub as they called him at Anfield. He was talking about Sturridge every week, questioning mentally about, is he feeling pain? Even Klopp did. He said that Sturridge needs to know whether he's feeling real pain, and it seemed he's been having problems. He's been sent to America with different thigh complaints and ankle and hamstring, and the goals in midweek would have done him the wonder of good. So would the performance, and Newcastle will be absolutely dreading facing him. He's got 6 goals against Newcastle, which is more than any other he's got that against any other Premier League side, and 4 in his last 3, so they won't want to be facing him. And not just Sturridge, Liverpool's a team, they must hate facing them, because I think I'm right in saying that no team has scored more Premier League goals against Newcastle than Liverpool. We remember them two famous 4-3s. They love scoring against Newcastle, don't they?
Yeah, it's going to be a real tough ask for Newcastle, and especially as they come into this game really poor form themselves, back-to-back defeats and 8 goals conceded in those 2 games as well. There was the 3-0 defeat at home to Leicester, who we all know doing fantastically at the top there, but last week they go to Crystal Palace, who tend not to be that, they can be a bit unconvincing at home, Palace. And you know, Newcastle took the lead in that game. Cissé, it was a well directed header, he timed his run well, nice cross in from the right from Jan Mat as well. And you thought maybe chance here, but then they go and end up losing 5-1, and some of the goals they were conceding as well. I mean, the first, the equaliser, which obviously did really hurt after they, I think it was very quickly after they'd gone in front, it was a big deflection on MacArthur's shot, and that was certainly unlucky there. But you know, they just didn't respond well to conceding there, and to let in 5 more after that, 8 goals conceded in 2 games. You know, just it feels like back to square one really for Newcastle, because they had back-to-back clean sheets in their previous 2 games before the last two, and things essentially starting to look a little bit better. But it just feels like they're back where they started. You know, one step forward, 2 steps back, that kind of thing. And 19th in the table now. after that big defeat last week. Bournemouth, you know, back above them. Really tough times for the club now, and McLaren just, yeah, he must be scratching his head and perhaps wondering how much longer he's got.
It is dire, isn't it? And they can't even call St James's Park a fortress, which they have been able to do in previous years. One win in seven Premier League games, and that was a 6-2 win over Norwich, which resembled a basketball match. It was almost you score, we score. If that had ended 6-0, Newcastle couldn't really have had any complaints, because Norwich fluffed some really, really good chances. They've not scored in their last two at home either, and three of the next four games, Liverpool at home, Spurs away, Everton at home, and then Villa visit in the middle of that. And you just sort of think, you mentioned there, how long has McLaren got? And Mike Ashley may decide to wield the axe if they get another big defeat on at the weekend against Liverpool, and you can see that happening the way Klopp's men are playing, can't you?
Yeah, definitely can. And I think Liverpool, there will be a sense of fear in the Newcastle players the way Liverpool are playing at the moment. And I think a lot would be surprised if the Magpies can get anything out of this one. Do you see them getting anything?
I don't know. The way Liverpool are playing at the moment, I expect them to pick Newcastle off quite easily, and I can see them running out really comfortable winners. 3-0, I'll say.
Yeah, it's hard to back anything other than a Liverpool win here, really, isn't it? And I think that the way they're playing, especially away from home, it has to be a win for the away team. I'm actually going to go 4-1. I think it could be very, very convincing. So both picking Liverpool to win this one convincingly by 3 goals. And finally, on Monday night, we go to Goodison for Everton against Palace. Liam, will start with the home side. Last time out in the league, really loads of late drama in that game, but ultimately drop points for Everton.
Massively, they threw it away, didn't they? And Roberto Martinez is bound to be fuming with his players at the end. 2-0 up with 10 minutes to go, and then 3-2 up deep into stoppage time. They've got to be winning that game. A win, in fact, puts them 4 points off the top four, but as it is, they're now 6, and it was a side that they really should be beating, a Bournemouth side that have struggled. And I'm sort of slightly worried about Everton, because defensive problems were Martinez's main issue at Wigan. They were great going forward, but they couldn't defend, and they ultimately ended up getting relegated. That's not obviously going to happen to Everton, but that was where Martinez's side fell down. On the plus side, Lukaku scored for the 10th time this season, which is the same as he managed the whole of last season in the Premier League, and he's looking a really good centre forward at the moment. He's been linked with the likes of Juventus and PSG. It's probably a bit too early for that, but when he's on top form, he's a handful, and there aren't many better strikers in the Premier League. But as I say, defensively, Martinez is bound to be concerned with what he saw down there.
Yeah, I think he can be, yeah, and obviously he can point to the fact that, you know, Phil Jagielka's still out injured, John Stones still is very, very classy centre-back, and I think a big thing for Everton from a defensive viewpoint in midweek, Leighton Baines made his return in the Capital One Cup quarter-final against Middlesbrough, which was another great, I have to say, a very good performance there. You know, they've had some pretty big wins in recent weeks, Everton, and this was, even though Middlesbrough are only a Championship side, they can cause a lot of problems, Borough, and at home especially, Middlesbrough, their defensive record is supreme in sort of the last year or so. I think in the last sort of 30-odd games, they had never conceded more than one goal in a game, and a lot of clean sheets in that time as well. And within, it was about half an hour or so in midweek, Everton had put two past them, and it was Deulofeu again, who he's just been a real star in sort of the last month or two. I mean, Lukaku's goal against Bournemouth, it was Deulofeu's pass again from the right. Those two, when Deulofeu plays those passes in from the right, it's just they seem to be on the same wavelength almost every time. And in midweek, Deulofeu opened the scoring, superb solo goal, took on a couple of players, then picked out the bottom corner, and then the second goal was a lovely team goal. They worked it well down the right. Deulofeu squared up the left back Emil Bieta, did about 7 step overs, beat him to the byline, crossed in, and Lukaku's movement, and then the header in off the far post. It was a brilliant goal, and those two, they're linking up so well. You've mentioned Lukaku, he's been a real star for them, and Barkley's also been contributing in recent weeks. He disappointed me a bit, Barkley, a few times earlier on in the season, but he seems to have found his fire again, and with Deulofeu there creating so many chances, Lukaku scoring all the goals, Everton do look very good, and it was a massive win for the club in midweek, because they haven't won a trophy for 20 odd years. They've never won the League Cup. Through to the semis now, they did perhaps get the toughest draw. I think, well, Liverpool and Man City were the two sides to avoid for Everton, and they would have liked to have drawn Stoke, but as it is, they've got City, which is a very tough game. But when you get to the semis, you know, you get two legs against City. Maybe they might have only preferred one. They might feel that they had more of a chance of beating them over just one game than two legs, but they could beat City, and only sort of, you know, three decent results now away from winning, you know, their first ever League Cup, first trophy in 20 years, which, even if, say, it doesn't go to plan in the league this year, if they can get that trophy, it would be absolutely huge for Martinez and the club.
They could well beat City, and they could end up being Palace as well, because one thing that they do raise concerns over defensively, but they do score a lot of goals. They obviously got three at Bournemouth, 2 at Borough, who you mentioned were notoriously tight defensively, and Palace travelled to Goodison Park, which is a place where Everton have scored 10 goals in their last two games. Admittedly, the opposition wasn't great. It was Sunderland and Villa, but to score 10 goals in two games against anybody at Premier League level is great. You mentioned Lukaku. He's been banging them in. Barkley weighed in with a couple against Aston Villa, played really well. He was man of the match in that game. Delafeu's adding goals to his game, and his crossing is really good at the moment. The likes of Lukaku, Kone, Barkley are all benefiting from that. I'll say it again, defensively there's been problems, but going forward, Everton are free-flowing at the moment. They look one of the best sides in the league, and they look like they can score against anyone, including Palace.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And we know that Everton, they got most of their tough fixtures out of the way earlier on in the season. Palace at home here, they fancy their chances here. And then, you know, up to 2016, after that, Norwich away. Leicester at home, that's going to be a really good game, I think, you know, because we've talked about Everton scoring a lot of goals at home. We know that Leicester are doing so well at the moment. Then they've got Newcastle after that, then Stoke at home up to 2016. So they don't really play any more of the big boys in 2016. And I think there's a chance they could be right near the top four come the new year if they can string some good results together. But Palace won't be an easy game here, that's for sure. Palace, they last weekend, 5-1 win over Newcastle at home, a massive win for them. And especially good considering the way they fell behind. It was quite slack defending to allow. I mean, I think they probably tried to play the offside trap, but no one really went with Cissé. He timed his run well, put the header away. It was a good start for Newcastle, but then the way Palace came back, you know, spurred on by, you know, Bolasie, Zaha, those kind of players, they were excellent again. MacArthur got two goals as well. First time he's ever got a brace as a professional. One of them, a very fortunate deflection, which sort of galvanised them with the equaliser. But after that, he was another excellent player there. It's the first time they've ever scored five goals in a Premier League match as a club as well. So really, really impressive display. It was only Newcastle, who we know have had a lot of problems this year, but for Palace, another decent result for them, and they're sitting quite pretty there in 7th place.
They are. You mentioned Zaha and Bolasie, and I think they're a reason why their away form has been so positive. They really are a standout side. I know Zaha's suspended for this game, but he'll probably be punching in maybe to play down that flank. They've won 4 games away from home this season. That's a record only Arsenal can better, which shows how good they are on the road. And since Alan Pardew took charge in January, his first game was against Dover Athletic, non-league side in the FA Cup. They won that, and they've also gone on to win 12 in total away from home in all competitions, which just goes to show that these players with pace, he relies on them heavily. One game always sticks out in my mind was towards the end of the last season, Steven Gerrard's last game at Anfield as a Liverpool player. The likes of Bolasie and Zaha, they tore Liverpool apart, and there's probably another reason as to why they've got a really good result where Everton, Liverpool's neighbours, record at Everton, sorry, Liverpool's neighbours. They've won 4 of the last 6 there, and the last 2 have been by 3-2 margin, which goes to suggest that there might be goals in this one as well.
Yeah, that would. I think it certainly would point to that, given that Everton's recent form. I mean, both sides have been scoring quite freely recently, and as you mentioned, Palace, they've had a good time at Goodison Park in recent seasons. Do you see them causing another upset here?
I see them causing problems. I'm not sure they'll win the game, but both sides are going to score goals, because I think there's question marks over them defensively, and I think they're two very similar sides. So I'm going to go an entertaining 2-2 draw.
2-2. Yeah, I think we've got back goals here, haven't we? I think. Yeah, we'd be disappointed if this one finished 0-0 or 1-0 or something like that. And I'm going to back goals as well, but I'm just going to back Everton to shade it 3-2. So, both see goals in this one. One going for a draw, one going for an Everton win. Okie-doke, that's it then. 10 games discussed and no doubt some bad predictions made. Make sure you head to sportsmall.co.uk throughout the weekend for live coverage of each and every one. We'll be back next week for the podcast for Matchday 16. We'll see you then.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.